Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. It is Monday, and we're going to talk some NASCAR after an exciting Daytona 500 with Rod Mullins, our NASCAR reporter. And Rod, man, I don't even know where to start with this. I'll start with saying Austin Cindric, the rookie, gets the win. I think it was his eighth career start on the NASCAR Top Series. He gets the win. He raced a drag race, basically, Bubba Wallace to the line and got the win with a wreck behind him. And we saw a couple of big ones in the last few laps. Boy, what a great day and night for NASCAR yesterday with the Daytona 500.
No doubt about it. It's probably one of the best Daytona 500s I've watched in a while, especially that drag race down the stretch right there to the start-finish line where Bubba Wallace gets beat out by Austin Cindric. And a lot of people are wondering, who is Austin Cindric? Well, Tim Hendrick is, there's no relation here, or Cindric, I should say. There's no relation or anything to the Penske's, but he does work for Penske Motorsports, and they brought this young man up. He's 23 years old, through the ranks, went into Xfinity Series. He's won the championship there. So the next logical step for him was to go to Cup. And so when Brad Keselowski was getting ready to, keep the secret and tell everybody what was going on last year, what he was going to be doing with his plans for this year, Austin Cindric was already being thought of in the plans of what they were going to do for him at Penske Motorsports. And I tell you, it was a roll of the dice. And some people might say, I don't think this rookie could pull this off. But you know what? A lot of people didn't think Trevor Bayne could pull it off either here several years ago for the Wood Brothers. And yes, he did. He pulled it off. And for Austin Cindric, here he was. It was his first real cup race. I mean, if you want to call it that, full-time cup race. His first Daytona 500 that way, 23 years old. And he celebrates this on Roger Penske's 85th birthday. What better way for you to be able to celebrate with the captain and also with your teammates winning the Daytona 500?
Bubba Wallace comes in second. You know, you talked, Rod, about the exciting end of the race. I'm a Bubba Wallace fan, and my wife and I were watching the race. We had a friend over. We were watching. And, I mean, literally that last couple of laps, you know, the restart, the overtime, you know, that the way things were playing out, you know, there were two lines of cars going, there were attempt to draw a third line in. And I tell you what, I mean, with that, the wreck right behind them, the drag race to the line, I actually jumped out of my chair and I was running up to the TV and screaming and yelling. It was that kind of race. That's great for NASCAR.
Yeah, it is. And Bubba Wallace, you have to feel for him too, because, you know, that's his second place finish in a Daytona 500. He did so under Petty Motorsports when he was driving the 43 car. But, you know, this had to hurt for him because he was a contender most all of the day of that race. And, I mean, I thought, you know, this could be the possibility. If he pulls this off, this is, for him, the crown jewel. That's something that Wendell Scott and some of the other drivers, you know, that have tried to make it on the NASCAR circuit have never done. And he could have very well pulled it off. I was really surprised. He said that, you know, in his comments, he said it sucks. And you have to understand, it does suck when you come in at second place and you're that close and you have been up at the front of the pack almost all day and contending for this. But, you know, it was a great race from him. I was really surprised with him. And, you know, I was surprised with some of the other drivers that just seemed to come out of nowhere. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., I was really surprised with him and how well he ran. And then that wreck right there toward the very end that took him out. And we'll talk a little bit more about that here in just a few minutes. But you had Ricky Stenhouse. He runs well at any kind of restrictor plate, super speedway. But man, that Chevrolet, he seemed to have the only Chevrolet that was able to have enough power to stay out in front all afternoon and into the night, because I think one of the things that happened, Toyota was using teamwork. Ford was kind of semi-using it. Chevrolet was, it's every man for themselves, I think, this time around. And Chevrolet, I don't think they knew what to expect out of this next generation car, but I think they'll know now what to expect out of it before they go back to Daytona in July or August or whenever it's supposed to be.
You bring up the next generation car. So this was one of those weird things where the first time you really, the teams really get a chance to, and the drivers get a chance to test it out was in race conditions there at Daytona. What were the returns? What were the reviews from the drivers as far as how the new car performed?
it's going to take time. It's just one of those things. It's going to take time for them. They were learning just as much as everybody else was of how they were going to be able to draft. And I think I mentioned this to you last week when we were talking. If they were able to get in a train draft and hold on to it, somebody was going to take off and they were going to actually shoot up through there. And then somebody was going to be left behind. And that happened several times during the race. And I saw second lines there, maybe with four or five cars and not as much resistance, but still stuck together. They couldn't even go against some of these guys that were 10 and 12 deep on, you know, that train pulling around through there. But all it took was for one person to get a little bit scared or to say, I'm going to take a chance and I'm going to drop down here to this second line. And when they dropped to that second line, that first row, that train ride that was going through there lost momentum. And then that second line picked back up. And that was just, you know, there was something about, at least in a pack of cars, this line worked really well. And some of the drivers were talking about that. I know that there were a lot of problems with the car on Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, Sunday night. And I don't know if you guys noticed it, but the flaps, the hood flaps, caused continuous problems. I think it caused Kyle Busch a lot of problems through the race because that thing was just popping up all the time, flopping there, and then it would flop back down. And then I think Christopher Bell had another issue with it. Don't know what was going on with that, but we know also that there will be a big meeting this week in Charlotte at the R&D development place that they have to put these cars in, because there was a tire gate situation that happened Thursday after the duels where Penske and also RFK Racing's tires were seized immediately after the race. Now, a lot of people were wondering what was going on with that. Was there something wrong with the tires? Well, come to find out, there was something wrong with the tires. They believe that some of the teams made modifications to those one hubs, that one part of that tire with some pins. And I don't blame them. They're trying to go and they're trying to at least have the possibility of, you know, having a better car, shorter time in the pits and so forth. But there was a modification made and there's going to be a hearing probably this week, and they'll determine whether or not Penske and RFK will suffer any kind of penalties out of it. I don't think it'll affect Sunday's race with Austin Cindric, but still, these guys are still playing with that little situation out there. How far can we push this thing? And I think I said that to you last year when we were finishing up for the year. This car, next generation car, it will be the test of these guys. How far can they push it when all of the equipment and everything is supposed to be the same all the way across the board? Nobody has an unfair advantage.
We had a lot of cautions in the race. Denny Hamlin got knocked out early. He was among four or five guys who got knocked out of the race early. And then we had a couple of big ones down the stretch. We even had the race stop for a bit. I can't remember if that was the 11-lap or 6-lap one. That
11-lap, yeah.
The 11-lap one when the race got stopped for a bit. At my little watch party, I was saying the words out loud as that one happened. A big one is about ready to happen. I just don't know when, you know, and there it happens. That's what you can expect though, with new cars, and guys going for what they can go for in the Daytona 500. I think I saw a stat, 25 of the 40 cars were involved at one point or another, getting hit at least. Even Wallace got some damage in that last one, the six lap one. So talk about that if you could, about the bumping and banging going on out there yesterday.
Well, the bumping and the banging, I guess right now the king of bumping and banging goes to Brad Keselowski, because according to Ricky Stenhouse Jr., you know, things were going just fine until Bad Brad, if you want to call him that, came up on Stenhouse, gave a bump to him and aggressively pushed him and turned him around. And then that started another melee right there. There were several of the drivers complaining that Keselowski was being a little bit too aggressive considering this was a new car. But, you know, what has Keselowski got to lose out of this? I mean, he's a car owner now. He's going to push the limits and see how far he can go with this new next generation car. And that's what he was doing out there on Sunday. You had some drivers. I'll tell you one that really surprised me out of the pack was Eric Jones and the Petty GMS Racing team. You know, they were running right there at one point top five before that big one hit, I think, at right around with 11 laps to go, and just completely red flagged the field. The focus factor 43 car was torn all into pieces. Not much for it to be able to go back on. But, you know, the lucky one out of this entire thing, out of this entire race on Sunday, was Harrison Burton in the Motorcraft, the 21 car by the Wood Brothers. I'm telling you, that car lifted up. It went airborne, but not as high as some of these cars have in the past. And then it came back down, and it took a pretty rough tumble, but it still stayed together. But, you know, NASCAR doesn't want to see things quite that severe, I think, with this next generation car, but still it did its job. Harrison Burton said afterwards, he said, you know, took a wild ride on this one. He said, it's going to be one to remember, but he says, you know, we've just got to get ready and get back at it and get ready for Fontana next week.
So I think I'm right on this. Was that Tony Stewart's debut in the booth with Fox yesterday?
Yes, it was. They signed him up this past year, and I thought he and Clint Bowyer worked together there in the booth really well. I thought they were smooth. I know there were some people that were probably saying, you know, Tony Stewart probably has no business being in the booth. But that's what I like about Tony Stewart in the press box. He's there. He's frank. He tells it like it is. If you don't like it, that's just tough. You're going to have to run and cry somewhere else, because Tony tells it like it is. And I thought he was in a different kind of, I guess, look at the entire race from the perspective of, here he is, car owner. He's a car owner. He's a former NASCAR champion and so forth. Then you got Clint Bowyer over there that's kind of like comic relief at the same time. But Clint Bowyer's there too, and he's got a lot of experience as well. So those two really gelled well, I thought, on Sunday afternoon during the race.
Yeah, they even had some fun. I can't think of who it was that took the lead at one point and broke Tony's record for most laps led in a Daytona 500 by a guy who never won the 500.
Right.
But they had Clint read that billboard, as they called it, and Tony faked being unhappy. He's pretty good at being unhappy, so he didn't have to fake it very hard. But he played that pretty well, I thought.
Well, yeah, and he was also busy. He had his mind on other things. The Winter Nationals out in California, and his wife, his race team that he has out there in the drag racing circuit now with the Camping World NHRA Series. You know, they were out there competing, and he was getting little messages off and on throughout the afternoon. Matt Hagen didn't do very bad at all. I think Matt Hagen came out on the winning end of that one. Essentially, Tony Stewart took what was left of Don Schumacher Racing and pretty much transformed it into his own little team. And then you had Ron Capps, who was a part of Don Schumacher Racing, kind of go off on his own. So he's kind of got his fingers into several different things: Eldora, NHRA, NASCAR, this sportsman type series that he's got that was a big ratings hit over the summer with a lot of the people that watch CBS. You know, I think sky's the limit. Who knows where he's going to be at here before it's over with. We may be talking about him as NASCAR president before it's all said and done. I don't know. But it's kind of scary to hear that, though.
You talk about being busy. Michael Jordan was at the race with his team, the Bubba Wallace car among his team. And then he was at the All-Star game, the NBA All-Star game last night, being honored among the 75 best NBA players in NBA history, the 75th anniversary team. And so he had double duty as well. And, you know, there was a celebrity element. I know in the pre-event TV coverage, Pitbull did a question and answer. He's involved with NASCAR now. You know, NASCAR is really sprucing some things up here, trying to get some more folks involved, people of color, people with different backgrounds, and a little bit of celebrity power to try to get some more eyeballs on the product.
Yeah, and I think it's working. But here's the big question that remains. How do you appease the old purist NASCAR group and the new fans that are in? You do not want to go and bring back the old, you know, antique style of racing or the antique style of promotion and different ways that things were done back in the old days. And the, you know, maybe especially in the 70s and the 80s and 90s, when it started really picking up with importance in cable television broadcasts and so forth. How do you keep those fans happy while not insulting or ticking off your new fans that you've picked up here in the last few years? NASCAR is having to balance a very tightrope right here. And, you know, I don't know how it's going to go. It's, it's one of those things that kind of it concerns me as we get down through the stretch. Some people say that NASCAR is prime for a split. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but I really don't think it's going to happen right now at this point with so much popularity. It was a sellout yesterday, 150,000 seats. You know, you had Pitbull, like you mentioned, Trace Adkins sang the national anthem. I think a lot of people were happy with that. Michael Jordan, as you mentioned, was there. Brad Daugherty was already there with his race team and everything. And, you know, Ricky Stenhouse, like I mentioned earlier, he had a good race there before the end of everything. Yeah, there were just so many. Charles Woodson. That was another big one right there. The, you know, the man that gave the command to start the engines, that was a big deal for him. And so, you know, it had a lot of that influence. We'll see where they go with that next week when they go to Fontana at the Auto Club Speedway.
I think it's great. Getting more eyeballs, getting more different people involved can only be a good thing. I was going to ask you about yesterday's race. We had a packed house. It had felt so good. You know, we've been trying to keep up the flame here for 2 years, dating back to 2020. It was quite a scene just looking out there and seeing those stands packed. I can only imagine what it was like to actually be there. And the racers, you could certainly feel it when Michael Waltrip was walking around, a few minutes before the start of the race and talking to various drivers. Another guy to add to the list of guys, that reminds me, Big E, the WWE, former WWE champion, was among the celebrities in attendance too. But when Michael was walking around talking to the drivers, a couple guys noted, like, hey, there's people here. This is different.
There was a lot of mention about that. I think Austin Cindric even mentioned it. He said, you know, this is to the fans. He said, this is great because he said, you know, we've done this and there's not been anybody here in the stands, or there's not been, you know, that many people up here in the stands. And it was kind of like in one way to me, it was kind of like, quote unquote, an FU to COVID, just telling, you know, saying, hey, we're going to go on with life. That's what we're going to do. And yeah, we're going to take our chances. And I think that was probably a good way to start at least 2022 in the NASCAR season, because NASCAR's still taking their ways of doing things and testing and so forth, but they're not making it a priority. They're not making it such a big deal as they did here a year or two ago when they shut the track down, they shut the racing down for 10 weeks, and then they slowly brought everybody back. You've got some people still wearing masks in the pits, and that's fine. Nobody, I think, is going to hold that against you. But this was a big shot in the arm on Sunday for the sport altogether. And I think it was just a great time for everyone that went to that race.
It was awesome to watch on TV as well. And it was, you know, in a way it worked out. You know, it seemed like the race was rolling right along and it might just end without any drama at the end. And then the way things ended with the crashes in the last few laps, it ended at, you know, after dusk. It was getting closer and closer to prime time. You had a little bit of night racing there as things wrapped up. And I, you know, I'm pretty sure, I mean, I know I texted a couple of friends who aren't even NASCAR fans and said, hey, you ought to turn this on. It's pretty exciting here, you know, when there was that break. And, you know, there might have been an opportunity for some new fans to get involved just because there's no football, you know, NFL's over. We're kind of in that little dead period right now. And NASCAR fills in the gaps pretty well as far as that with Daytona 500. And I think last night's race might have helped in that respect.
NASCAR had a good Heidi moment. Let's just put it that way. When NBC screwed it up back in the 60s with that Raiders game and so forth for Heidi, I think in this case, Fox and NASCAR probably pulled this one off really well. Now, if you really want to come up with a big time, coup out of this whole thing when it comes time, wait till, football season rolls around here in the fall again. We'll see when we start getting close to playoff time, especially when these races will sometimes maybe overlap into Sunday night football in America or whatever it's going to be. That's where we're going to see a big change. How's it going to affect things? Well, we'll just have to wait and find out. But, I think Fox pulled off a major coup with this one. It was their good Heidi moment, I think, in this one.
Yeah, they lucked out with that great ending coming later in the day as far as that goes. So what do we look forward to this weekend, Ron, with the NASCAR? Now we got Daytona under us. We got a week with the new car. They got to, you know, they'll do some reconfiguring, re-engineering, talking about it this week, that kind of thing. What do we look forward to this weekend?
Well, they're going to Fontana, California, out near Los Angeles. Well, I should say a little farther away from Los Angeles, but still you can see the city in the background, the skyline. But they're going out there for the Auto Club Speedway race. They're going to be racing out there. I think this might be the last time they're going to be racing on this surface, because Auto Club Speedway is scheduled to be reconfigured as a short to mid-sized track. And a lot of the drivers are looking forward to that happening, because they feel like too many super speedways in one way. California, no super speedway. If you're going to get the fans, you're going to bring them in here on short track and medium track racing. That's where they've made their money at so far, the smaller tracks out in there. And, you know, of all people, Kevin Harvick can probably tell you that. Jeff Gordon can probably tell you that. Tony Stewart could tell you. All of these guys made money. And, you know, these tracks even made some money when they had some great short track builds like what they had here years ago. Shoot, we even had a track here close by to where I live. It was one of the most popular events that they could have when they brought in Alan Kulwicki, Rusty Wallace, Mark Martin, Dale Earnhardt, Harry Gant. And they'd bring these guys in sometimes for a race weekend, jam-packed. People would be jam-packed in the stands. And, you know, I think that's what NASCAR's got to get back to, is getting people back in the stands, giving them entertainment that they want. And I think this is just as much a great opportunity out in Fontana for them to do so this coming weekend. You know, we've got a lot of racing coming up. We've still got Vegas coming up. That's going to be kind of a short to mid track right in there. And then before long, we're going to be in April, and we'll be at Bristol with the dirt track race at night. So that's another little thing that's been thrown into the machine that's going to be a little different than what it has been before. So we're seeing a lot of changes with NASCAR. We're going to find out how this really goes. And right now, the sky's the limit for NASCAR. I think they're riding high after this Daytona 500. Let's just hope they don't come crashing back to earth this weekend after the Fontana race.
Well, Ron, thank you for your time and your insight. As always, look forward to talking to you again next week.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.